Welcome to the Young and Ambitious podcast, a podcast for ambitious young people who want to master their mindset, launch a business, and make their dream life. I'm your host, Nika Molini. I am the positivity boss and Gen Z's personal growth coach. I help young people get clear on their goals and design a life they love through working on their mindset and implementing successful personal growth strategies. Let's get right into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Young and Ambitious podcast. Today, we have Sam Brown here with us, who is the founder of Smart 20s, which is a personal development blog. And she's a mindset coach and a personal development blogger. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Nika. I'm really excited to be on your podcast.
Awesome. So to get us started, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey to getting to where you are.
Yeah, so I'm a mindset coach and a personal development blogger, and I have my podcast as well, the Smart 20s podcast. So my journey to really getting here, there's like a very long version because it didn't happen overnight, and there's a shorter version, so I'll try and keep it succinct. But I started Smart 20s in 2013, and I basically just started it because I couldn't find any blogs that were talking about what it was really like to be in your 20s. They were either like, look at my perfect life, or I'm broke and just complaining about all of that. And I wanted something where it was actually someone who was really trying to improve themselves, but just had no idea what the hell they were doing. So I started that in 2013. And I kept it a secret for a couple of years because I just felt so embarrassed that I had a blog, and I thought, like, who the hell was I to be blogging and to be giving advice because I have no idea what I'm doing. So it took me a couple of years to get out of my own way enough to even tell like my boyfriend and my friends and family about it. And then in 2016, I really started to put a lot more effort in. Like, I was definitely putting, it felt like a lot of effort in before that, but I was just spending so much time procrastinating and getting in my own way. So in 2016, that's when I really started to go for it. And I also, just for context, I went to uni, I have a law degree and a finance degree. And so I started my blog about halfway through my uni degrees, and I'd already kind of figured out that I didn't want to be a lawyer because I don't like arguing with people, and I liked finance, but I wasn't really particularly drawn to it. So I started my blog, and I ended up working in insolvency accounting for a couple of years, so liquidations and bankruptcies, and not a very satisfying job telling people that they're broke all the time. So I was doing it as a side hustle while I was working full time and also studying full time. So it really, it was a struggle for a very long time. It still is in a lot of ways, but I launched an online course, and I eventually moved to doing part-time work in a completely different job, not related to my my degrees. I'm just working at a hospital part-time just because I realized that I could support myself that way and have a lot more time to work on my blog. So so I really just started to get out of my own way and go for it. And I've got, a podcast now. I'm doing mindset coaching. I've had a YouTube channel and all sorts of different things that have spurred on from the blog. But I don't know if that's answered the question, but that's kind of been the very short version of how I've gotten to where I am today. There's been a lot of fear and self-doubt in the process, and it hasn't been easy, and it hasn't been quick either. It has felt like a very long time since I first started. That's how I've gotten to where I am today, in like the shortest story that I could tell.
Very cool. Very cool. No, that was really good. And tell us more about like what changed in 2016 that sparked you to really start taking it more seriously.
So I've been blogging for about 2.5 years at that point, and I just kind of had this like enough is enough moment when I had just felt like I was struggling so hard. And at that point I was already working full time, and I just kind of realized like if someone looked at me from an outsider's perspective, they wouldn't say that I'm doing everything possible to be successful at blogging, even though it felt like I was doing so much, because what I was doing wasn't actually the important stuff. I was really holding myself back in so many ways, and I wasn't investing in my blog or my business. I was just kind of figuring out by myself, but keeping it small, like I was self-sabotaging and really trying to avoid being successful. As crazy as that sounds, I know I'm not the only one who's done it, where you want to keep everything small and manageable. And I had all sorts of beliefs that like if I was successful that everyone would reject me and abandon me and I wouldn't get everyone's approval. So like keeping it small was my way of really just trying to please everyone, even though they've been so supportive. Like it's just completely illogical sometimes, our fears. So that was just my way of trying to maintain having everyone's approval. But I was kind of just like, this is ridiculous. Like it's been 2.5 years and I'm still so in my own way about this. So I invested in a blogging course and I just started doing, like there was nothing particularly amazing about the blogging course. It was more so that when I invested in it, I just made the decision that I was actually going to really start trying. And I just said to myself, like, I'm going to do everything that's recommended because I've been trying myself and it hasn't been working. So I'm just going to do everything that she says to do. And obviously once you start putting in the effort, things start to change because I just hadn't been doing all the important things that I knew I should be doing because I was self-sabotaging. So that's really when it all started. But it's been such a journey. It took me it's probably taken me till early this year to really get out of my own way on that next level, because even though I was a lot more active in growing my blog and everything, it hasn't really been until earlier this year that I've really kind of let myself fully go for it. And it's a constant thing that I'm working on. Like I can feel myself constantly trying to sabotage myself. So it's not like it's something that I've completely overcome and there's no hurdles coming from me. Like I'm really the main thing. Like most people, like we're the main thing in our own way. So yeah, that's what really changed in 2016. I just sort of was like, this is ridiculous. I'm just holding myself back. And it's just been for such a long period of time that if I don't actually start doing something different, like nothing's going to change. So that's really why 2016, it was in April that I was like, okay, I'm going to try. And then it still has taken me a long time to then just get out of my own way even further.
Right. And I think as young women, especially, like so often we're just like dimming our light in a sense, and we're not really just allowing ourselves to be our full selves and put ourselves out there. So what type of like advice would you give someone who is in that process of like self-sabotaging and doubting themselves? Like what would you say to them?
I think like the biggest thing is just having the self-awareness that that is what's happening, because I think for a long time, like I could feel that I was getting in my own way, but I didn't really have enough awareness around like just how many ways that someone can do that. Like a few examples. One of the ways that I used to really get in my own way was keeping myself, and I still find myself doing this if I don't catch it, keeping myself really busy with unimportant things so that I get to feel good about being productive and having a lot of on my plate. A lot of people with the perfectionist mindset will really put a lot on their plate and try and achieve so much. And it's often coming from this place of, if I do more, then I'll be more, because there's this underlying, I'm not good enough. And even though we intellectually know that we're good enough, it's if you don't get it at that really subconscious level, then we still, no matter what we achieve, we don't believe we're good enough, which is why it can be so frustrating if you're a high achieving perfectionist. But I think if you're just getting into it and like just wanting to start to uncover the self-sabotage and all of that, it's really just having the awareness and watching yourself, because we often try and as soon as we notice we're doing something negative, we try and change it and like move ourselves into more positive habits, which is something that is important to do. But I think like for me, that example that I was giving of filling my time with lots of unimportant things and like making simple processes overly complicated just so that I'd have an excuse not to do all the things I knew I should be doing. But then I like, it gave me a justifiable excuse that, oh, well, I'm too busy to be like selling, like making a new course and doing all this kind of thing because I've got all this other stuff going on. And it's really hard to spot in the moment, but that's definitely one of the things, one of the ways that so many people self-sabotage and basically just making your life so busy that you don't have room for all those things you want to be doing. And yeah, or just, there's just so many excuses of like, oh, I'll just do this once that other thing has happened. Another example of a way that I've self-sabotaged, just to like give your listeners some different ideas and things to reflect on. But I had been saying, like, since quitting my full-time job, whenever anyone would ask me about blogging stuff, I'd always find myself saying, I really want to work from a co-working space. Like, I've been looking into co-working spaces. And yet it's like for a year, I didn't really actually do anything to get myself to a co-working space. And it wasn't until I realized I had this underlying belief that only real entrepreneurs could work from a co-working space. And so I had to wait until I was a real entrepreneur, whatever the hell that means, until I could work at a co-working space. And as soon as I saw I had that belief that was stopping me, then I was like, oh, that's just ridiculous. But for a long time, I didn't have the awareness. So I think really it's just getting that awareness of what you're doing, and that self-sabotage is usually so easy to justify. And another way that we do it is withholding effort. And I don't know if you'll be able to relate to this, but a lot of people, like I used to cram for all of my exams and assignments. Like I'd do everything just the night before. And it can feel like that comes from being disorganized or just like not being able to get yourself together. But really, I think for a lot of people, it's driven by this whole idea that if I don't try my hardest, then I can't really fail. And that, you know, a lot of us will do that so that if we don't get the mark that we wanted, we can be like, oh, but I would have done better if I'd tried harder. And that kind of thinking flows over to like business, obviously. It flows over to health and fitness. Like, oh yeah, I'd have a better body if I actually went to the gym. So many different things that we withhold that effort. So we have an excuse not to be succeeding. And it's really frustrating because a lot of the time, consciously, we are trying to put that effort in and we are trying to achieve our goals. But like on this subconscious, unconscious level, we're trying to withhold effort so that we can keep an excuse available for if we don't succeed. And it all comes down to like this perfectionist fixed mindset, which I don't know if you want to go into a bit further what that is, because I've just found a lot of people say to me, I really relate to what you talk about, but I'm not a perfectionist. And I think that a lot of people don't know that this kind of set of beliefs is really what's driving a lot of their action, and that it's not like just because you currently think that way, you always have to think that way. You can move into what's called a growth mindset, which is a lot of the work that I'm doing personally and I help my coaching clients with and my podcast listeners and all of that. So I don't know if you want to go more into like what that looks like and everything, but yeah, I think for someone who's just kind of wanting to start catching themselves, it's really just observing yourself with compassion and just noticing the different ways that you get in your own way.
Damn, I feel like you spoke to me so much in that whole last part. Because honestly, yeah, I get in my own way so much too. Like, I was at a point where I was doing like 10 different projects. Like, I have 2 podcasts, I have the blog, I have a job, like I have so much going on. And like, and I realized, I was like, I'm actually stopping myself from reaching my own full potential because mm-hmm. I'm just limiting myself by taking on so many things that I can't actually devote myself to any of them properly. And like, mm-hmm. this just like hit me the other day and I was like, wow. So yeah, I mean, I quit my job today.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Which is crazy. And like, I mean, I should have quit quote unquote a long time ago, because it's really a student position. Like, I was supposed to be on a contract until the end of August, and then I extended my contract in the beginning of August because I was like, oh, you know, my parents are really happy with me being in this job. And like, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to pay the bills if I don't have this? And there was just so much self-doubt. But then, you know, it just hit me in the past couple of days. And I was like, I need to do this. So,
yeah. I'm actually going through a very, very similar thing. And I think like, I keep having realizations like this as I go through it. Like, it's something that keeps coming up. But I had realized, like, with the part-time job that I was talking about, that I also keep saying to people, like, you know, I'm planning to leave. I'm really wanting to leave soon. Like, and this is just to support me in the meantime. But then when I actually looked, like, took a step back, which is only like a few weeks ago, I was like, hang on, I haven't even figured out exactly how much money I need to be making. Like, I haven't actually done the things I'd need to do that. And then, so what I've decided to do is actually take all of the money from my part-time job and just put it into a completely separate account so I can't touch it. And then I'm just going to be living off my business so that it actually really forces me to, and I've been so motivated since making that decision, because before, like, you can have all these goals, but unless you raise your standards of like the minimum that's you expect of yourself, it's really challenging to achieve a big goal if you'll settle for something less. So I think that's something that had really been holding me back. And it's so hard to see this stuff when you're in it. Like, as you were saying, it can go on for a long time and then you're like, hang on, like, what am I still doing here? So that's something that I've really been working on. And also, like, I think so many young women are multi-passionate, and I think, I don't know who told us that we're meant to just have this one purpose. I know so many of my readers and listeners get stuck because they think this, like, there's this one thing they're meant to be doing and they have to figure it out and they shouldn't choose the wrong thing, where there's so many different things we could all be doing, and so many of us have so many ideas. And I think a big part of being an entrepreneur and doing your own things is knowing that you're going to have 50 great ideas, but that you should only pursue like maximum 3 of them. Like, that we all have constantly, especially like listening to podcasts. I love podcasts. That's what really got me into blogging, was listening to podcasts. And I get so many amazing ideas, and you hear all these people doing great things. You're like, oh, I could do that. I could do that. And like, we all could, but as you were saying, when you put so many things on your plate, it means you can't do any of them well. And I think that it definitely is one of the ways we sabotage ourselves, because we get to feel productive and busy and important, but we have an excuse for not, like, it feels very vulnerable to just have one project you're going all in on. Like, that is a really vulnerable thing to do. It feels much more comfortable to be like, I'm going to try these 10 things, and like, this happens subconsciously, I'm going to try these 10 things, and if they don't work out, then I can just point to the fact that I'm so busy as the excuse for failure, instead of being like, no, I'm just going to get this podcast, the number one podcast. That's all I'm doing. Because then that's so vulnerable, like, because it might not get there. And you really have to keep going at something. And so often, I think with having a lot of projects, so often it's because we start a project, it's really exciting. And I like to call it the like self-doubt backlash that for me always happens about 24 hours after a good idea. You're on like a high for 24 hours being like, this is amazing, everything's going to be perfect. And then about 24 hours later, it's like, that's the worst idea I've ever had. It could never work. And so often we pick up a new project, like, we have the great idea, we get started. And then a few weeks later, when we hit that hard point, we all start this thing instead. And we're just constantly chasing that excitement of having a new idea, and then end up with this full plate of things that is such a struggle to manage. And then we spend so much time managing it that we don't get to actually do the work. And then we get to have an excuse for why it didn't work. It's so backwards, like, when you really think about what we're doing to ourselves on a subconscious level. But I know that there are so many people that do it. And I've definitely done it a lot myself. And I'm constantly just trying to catch myself and be like, okay, do I really want to do this new thing, or am I just doing it to avoid the hard work on one of my already ongoing projects? Like, there are so many things I've been thinking of starting. Like, no, I just have to get this thing completely finished and up and going before I can even think about anything else. And part of what helps is having this belief that there's enough time to do everything and that you don't have to also be doing everything, that like if you do one thing well, it's better than doing 10 things on an average level, which we all know intellectually, but like really calling yourself out on like, no, I'm just going to go all in on this podcast or all in on this business or all in on this Instagram account or whatever it is, instead of being like, I'm just going to like have my finger in everything a little bit and we'll see how it goes.
Oh my God. I feel like you're speaking like directly right now. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Let's go into the perfectionism mindset that you started kind of talking a little bit about. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people don't know that they have this perfectionist fixed mindset. So Carol Dweck is someone who really introduced me to the idea that perfectionism is just what is called the fixed mindset as well. And that you can get out of the fixed mindset and into the growth mindset. But so many people think perfectionists are neat and tidy. They're super organized. And in reality, most perfectionists procrastinate. They want to be organized, but they're not. And so a lot of the symptoms are having an all or nothing mindset. I know a lot of people can relate to, you're either like going gung ho at something or you're just not, as particularly with like health and fitness, it seems to come up. It's a lot more obvious in that area of our lives of like you're eating everything healthy and then you just like fall off the wagon a tiny bit and then you just completely give up. People pleasing is a huge one. Fear of failure, fear of success. And every fear in between that. And it's also underlined by this idea that you'll never be good enough no matter what you achieve. And so it's why a lot of perfectionists are so ambitious and are so like have this real need to be productive, because it's driven by this belief that if I do more, then I'll be more. And yeah, there's a lot of other kind of symptoms of it too, but I definitely wouldn't say that being neat and organized is one of them. Like procrastinating is one of the huge ones, and that a lot of people can relate to. Withholding effort, so not giving something 100%, also only doing things that you know you'll succeed at. So we have ridiculously high standards, but instead of having that drive us to achieve those standards, we think, oh, if I can't achieve that, it's better not to do anything at all. And what it really comes down to at the deepest level is that we're trying to avoid the feeling of shame. So it's not that we're actually scared of the rejection itself or not getting approval or the failure. Like we think we can handle that, but it's the shame that would come with that, because we have this underlying belief that we're not good enough. So to get further evidence that we're not quote unquote good enough is so painful that we're trying to make everything perfect so that we can avoid that. Does that make sense?
So yeah. So how do we deal with the shame then?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that really helped me was I think a lot of the time we don't even realize that that's a thing. So one of the breakthroughs that I had about a year ago now, just to share a story so that, cause I know that when I share this story on my podcast, it's helped some people have a breakthrough, but my mom died when I was 11 from breast cancer. And as a child, so often this mindset starts when we're kids, and that's the most informative years for us cognitively. So I had made that experience mean that she had abandoned me and that I wasn't good enough. So obviously intellectually that makes no sense. She died from breast cancer. But as a kid, I made that mean something about myself. And also before it, like when she was sick, I had also, because she wasn't getting better, like as a kid in like a child's mind, I'd made that mean something about myself. So I thought until like literally last year, I thought the reason that I couldn't talk about it without crying, like I literally would not have been capable of having this conversation. The reason was because of grief. But then I had a breakthrough with the help of coaching around what actually caused, like that everything kind of came back to me making that situation mean something about myself, and that I felt ashamed that that happened. And once I saw that, and I had a conversation with my dad as well about, like, basically I was like, you know, this thing happened, which meant I wasn't good enough. And like, it just seemed like reality in my head. And he was just like, what the hell are you talking about? And I never had like a vulnerable conversation like that with him about like, you know, here are all my fears and my beliefs about, like, you know, this happened and that meant that, like, this person didn't love me and this happened. And anyway, so once I saw that that was actually shame, because I was like, oh, that's just grief that hasn't been processed. But once I actually got the awareness that as a kid, I'd made that mean something, and then that was completely illogical, then it actually just dissipated so much shame. And since then, I have so much, like, the I'm not good enough self-talk has just, like, completely, not completely stopped, but, like, just come down to such a small level. And I think it takes a lot of personal development work to get to that point. But, like, we all know intellectually, like, done is better than perfect and everyone's good enough. But I think it takes, like, seeing yourself in a whole new way, which is why I'm so passionate about personal development. But getting that awareness of, like, what conclusions that you drew as a child. And a lot of the time as well, we just, like, it's so interesting, perfectionism and the fixed mindset, that we're doing all of this, like, orchestrating everything so we can avoid shame, but we spend so much time shaming ourselves and beating ourselves up. So it's like we're actually creating the very emotion that we're trying to avoid, which is just, like, twisted when you really think about how it works. But I think it does take personal development work to really see where that story of I'm not good enough has come from. It's often, like, I would say in the first 10 years, or they say, like, the first 7 years of your life is when, and it doesn't have to be something traumatic like losing a parent, but there's just some experience. It could be like a teacher said just a flyaway comment. It could be anything. It could be something that seems so insignificant to someone else. But most people will have this one experience where they just made it mean something about themselves. And the thing about being human is that we always want to believe that we're right about ourselves. And we have this real need to be consistent with the story that we have about ourselves. So that's why it doesn't matter how much you achieve. If you have this subconscious belief, like, intellectually we know we're good enough, but if you have that subconscious belief you're not good enough, then it doesn't matter what you achieve, because you're looking at everything through this lens of, but I'm not good enough, like, and nothing's ever going to be enough to make up for it. And it's why so many people get so frustrated, because everyone's so supportive, your life looks great from the outside, and yet inside you're like, but it's not enough. And that's why it takes the mindset work. Like, we try and compensate for that with achievement, and it just doesn't work, and it's very exhausting. And yeah, I think that with the shame, part of what Brené Brown talks about, which I find really helpful, is that shame is just a natural human emotion. It's something that it can't be avoided, but she talks about building shame resilience. And the way to do that is to actually talk about it. So I get that through my podcast, really. It's, like, very cathartic and therapeutic for me, because by openly and honestly sharing myself, it, like, dissolves the shame around it, because I'm talking about it. And then I'll also get people saying back to me, like, I'm the same, I thought I was the only one. And it's also, like, the awareness that most people also have that story going on, so there's nothing that's weird about you. But I've just found, like, trying to build that shame resilience by talking about it instead of what I used to do. Like I mentioned, that I hid my blog, which is what makes shame, like, really fester when you're hiding something. So you might be hiding it from yourself and trying to avoid even thinking about it yourself, or you're hiding something from loved ones or from colleagues or whatever it is. Like, that tends to just make shame really build upon itself. So a big thing with shame is just knowing that it's a normal human emotion, that it's just a feeling. Like, it feels very uncomfortable, but it's just, like, a physical sensation in your body. And talking about it, not necessarily on a podcast, that's not for everyone, but talking about it with trusted people and opening up. And I found that the more that I open up and share these experiences, like, the less and less shame I have, because I get all this feedback from people being like, yeah, me too. Like, when I first started sharing my story, I thought everyone would be like, what the hell? You're such a weirdo. Like, what are you talking about? Or, yeah, that's true. Or your fears, like, yeah, you're not good enough. And that it can feel so scary. But once you start doing it and you realize everyone's like, yeah, me too, like, like, oh, wait, so I shouldn't, like, why am I feeling ashamed if everyone else feels the same? So building shame resilience is something that's really helpful. And there's lots of other ways as well to get into the growth mindset. But a lot of us also get into that fixed mindset. And it's called a fixed mindset because you believe that your talents and abilities and intelligence are fixed, and that everything you do is evidence of whether or not you're good enough naturally. So a lot of perfectionists will want everything to feel natural to them. Whereas in the growth mindset, you believe that your talents and abilities and skills can be improved upon, including like your IQ and everything. So if you're in that mindset, then you're not making everything mean whether or not you're good enough. You're just like, oh, great, I'm continually learning. And a lot of us intellectually know the growth mindset, but we're stuck. We act in accordance with the fixed mindset. So there's different ways that you can get yourself into a growth mindset. Just really by focusing on like rewarding yourself and praising yourself for effort. So many of us end up in the fixed mindset because as kids, we're praised for being smart. I'm sure you can probably relate that you get praised for having good grades and you did a really good job. And so what we do is then we're like, okay, well, I get praised for being smart, so I should only do things that I'm going to succeed at. And if I'm not going to succeed, then I need to have some kind of excuse, like being too busy or not having tried my hardest. So that's kind of, I think, where it comes from, is this culture around achievement. And then it's also coupled with this wanting to avoid shame, even though we're shaming ourselves constantly if you're in that mindset, but really wanting to avoid that painful emotion. So that's where all the procrastination and people pleasing and all or nothing and fear of success and fear of failure and all of that comes into it.
Okay, awesome. That was a very comprehensive answer. And then the next question I have is like, how do we really start to build that sense of self-worth then?
Mm-hmm. I think it, like, as I was saying, for me, it took having that breakthrough. And there are so many people, we all intellectually know that we're good enough and we're worthy and all of that. And I do my best on my podcast and my blog and my Instagram, not to just be preaching like you are good enough, done is better than perfect, because it has to be that level deeper. And I do get kind of frustrated. And I was like, part of the reason that I've done all of this personal development work myself is because I was just getting so frustrated with reading all of this advice about self-worth and self-love. And it was just all so fluffy. And I intellectually knew, like, I didn't need to be told the intellectual beliefs I needed to have because I got it. But I needed to do that work. And like a lot of people with self-worth and self-confidence talk about, you know, like fake it till you make it and buy clothes that fit you properly and all of that kind of thing, which sure, that's could be helpful, but that's not actually really going to help. And a big part of the work that I've been doing, which relates to self-worth and to everything, is really getting the understanding that all of my feelings and actions and results originate with my thoughts, instead of like what I was saying before with, you know, you'll feel more confident if you have clothes that fit you. The only reason that's the case is because you have different thoughts when you're wearing clothes that fit you. It's nothing to do with the clothes, and you can have those, you can train your brain to have those kinds of thoughts in any clothes. But we're really taught as kids that, you know, all of your feelings come from what's external to you. Someone can hurt your feelings, when in reality, no one can hurt your feelings. Someone will say something and you will think a thought that will hurt your own feelings. And so a big part of my own personal development journey has been really understanding that and taking responsibility for all of my feelings, because a lot of times we'll think, you know, I'd have more self-worth if I had a better job, or if I had a, if I had a boyfriend or whatever it is. And really, it's just learning to think different thoughts, training your brain. It's something that I've learned a lot. And I talk about this podcast a lot, the Life Coach School podcast. Brooke Castillo is the host. She's absolutely amazing. And she has informed a lot of the personal development work that I do around really understanding that my thoughts are what's creating everything in my reality. And that, or even though I can do a lot of work on that, it's like something that she really teaches and that I'm a huge advocate of, is that life is 50-50 positive emotion and negative emotion. If you're having more positive emotion, more positive feelings than 50% of the time, it's probably because you're indulging in false pleasures like scrolling through social media, Netflix, eating, drinking, whatever, all of those ways, overworking, all of those different ways that we try to make ourselves feel better, but that it's okay to have negative emotion. Like, I think that we've grown up getting told, you know, everything in your life needs to be done so that you can be happy. And if you're not feeling happy, something's wrong. And I think that that's what leads so many people into, and I'm not an expert at all on any of this, but a lot of people end up feeling so anxious and so down on themselves because they have this underlying belief that I should be happy and I'm not, so something's wrong. And then they feel bad about feeling bad and it makes them feel even worse. But if you can know, like, okay, well, life is 50% negative emotion, even if you're doing the best self-coaching, you have the most amazing coaches, like, your brain will just naturally produce negative thoughts. But just knowing, and that's okay, it doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. It doesn't mean that I'm on the wrong path. That's just 50% of life is going to be that negative emotion, and that's completely fine. And negative emotion serves such an important purpose. Like, you don't want to feel happy when someone dies, but we're told that, you know, you should be happy all the time and that you need to achieve certain things to be happy. And so I think, like, the midlife crisis and the quarter life crisis is caused by us getting told this story that, you know, if you get tick all the boxes, achieve X, Y, and Z, you'll be happy. And then we tick those boxes and we're not happy. And we're like, oh my God, something's gone wrong, and go into this complete existential crisis. When really happiness comes from the kinds of thoughts that you're thinking, not from the job you have or not from the house that you have. And it's easy to have, like, thoughts of happiness in certain situations for sure, but some people have the best situations and they're miserable, and some people have the worst situations and they're so happy. So I think, like, I know this isn't directly related to self-worth, but I think just really taking responsibility for the feelings that you're having is huge. Because if you, like, when we have our self-worth placed on other people and external things, it's just so out of our control. But once you go, okay, well, my self-worth is up to me. And one thing as well is that a lot of people in this perfectionist fixed mindset, I've struggled with this myself, is thinking, like, if I'm happy and grateful for where I am, then I won't have any motivation to improve myself. So I need to be dissatisfied. Otherwise, I don't have any motivation. So what I've really started to learn is that I actually achieve so much more if I'm grateful for where I am. And I think we're just not taught this whole thing of, like, you can be grateful for where you are and want more, because the reason for getting more isn't that it'll make you happy. You can be happy wherever you are. The reason for wanting more is so that you can grow, is so that you can challenge yourself, is so that you can have new experiences in your life. But when we're told, like, the only reason to do something different is so you're happy, we think, like, okay, well, I have to be dissatisfied with where I am, otherwise I won't ever change. So I hope that's made sense. But I think self-worth really comes down to taking responsibility for the feelings that you're having. And that can be hard, because then you're like, well, why am I making myself feel so negative? But when that's coupled with the knowledge and belief that life is going to be 50% positive, 50% negative, and it's totally okay, and I'm just human and I'm doing the best that I can, then I find there's such a relief in that I'm in control, and it's okay that I haven't completely mastered it and that I'm never going to. Like, this is just what being a human is like.
Right. All right. So to wrap up this podcast, the last question that we ask everyone is, what advice would you give your younger self?
I think the advice that I give my younger self is really just that it's all going to be okay. I think that our experiences and, like, everything that has gotten me to this point, like, I wouldn't change anything. I know so many people say that, but I think there's a reason so many people say that. It's because, like, I don't know if it's just because we justify what's happened because there's no alternative, but I think that really, like, the experiences we have are all the right experiences for us. And so I wouldn't give any advice of like maybe the only advice I give is just get out of your own way a little sooner. But even then, so much of what I do is helping people get out of their own way. And if I hadn't been in my own way for so long, then I wouldn't be able to help them, because I'd be like, oh yeah, of course, it's just easy. Just do this, that, and the other. When I'm like, no, I totally get it that intellectually you've got all of these plans and ambitions, but then you just can't make yourself do it. Like, I have been there for so long that that's what's been really helpful. So I really just like to, I think my advice to my younger self would really just be, it's all okay and you can't really make the wrong decision, because I was so focused when I was younger and I have to figure out exactly what to do with my life. I have to figure out what's going to make me happy. And that really led to a lot of confusion and overwhelm and inaction, because I was just like, oh, I have no idea what the perfect thing is, so I'll just go along with the flow. But just that belief of like, actually everything's all okay. And I often think about the advice that my older self would give me. Like, it's the same kind of question, but like, what would my 50-year-old self tell my 27-year-old self? Which is basically the same thing. Like, it's all okay. There's no rush. Everything's going to be fine. Like, it's just really comforting, I find, to think about the advice that the older me, with more perspective and more experience and with probably a lot more patience, would give to myself. And I think this wasn't directly what you asked, but I think like I made a decision earlier in my 20s, like a few years ago, that I just wasn't going to feel bad about aging, because that's just like, it's going to happen. So I may as well embrace it. And now I just feel so grateful for every additional year that I get to have. And I think we live in this culture of like, once you're 21, you're over the hill. And when I turned 25, someone said to me like, oh, you're on the like the downhill now. I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm only 25. So I think as well, like having that belief, because when I was younger, I used to really think like, I don't want to get old, because it was this attachment of like, the older I get, the less time I have to achieve everything. And so I now just see it from like, I'm so grateful, and people get so caught up, and I did too, in like needing to get everything now. But then when I ask like my coaching clients, well, okay, you've got 50 years left of your working life. What do you want to do? Like, that just puts it in perspective. So yeah, I think the advice to my younger self would really just be, everything's going to be okay. And to really just give myself that perspective of like, there's no rush. There are very few things you can do to like completely mess everything up. So just, you know, enjoy the experiences you're having, let everything be, and don't let myself think like things should be different. And now I have the belief like everything is the way it should be. And you can tell like if something is a certain way, that's because it should be that way. And if it's not a different way, like, oh, I should be more successful by now. Well, if I should have, I would be. So I shouldn't be. Like, I just think we all have this dialogue of like what should be happening versus what is happening. And we get so disappointed with that gap, even though our shoulds are just completely based on nothing usually. But I just now like to see it as everything that's happening is what should be happening. If I was meant to be more successful, I would be. If I was meant, like, I just have thoughts like that to comfort myself. So I would just comfort my younger self, I think, and just relieve a bit of the pressure and just remind myself that it's all okay. And yeah, there are very few things you can do to really mess everything up. Like, it'll all work out and you'll find your way. And yeah.
I love that. What a perfect note to end on. So, if people want to find you, Sam, where can they find you?
So the best place to find me, if you like listening to podcasts, is probably on my podcast, which is called the Smart 20s podcast. I also have my blog, Smart 20s, which is smart-20s.com. And I'm also on Instagram as well at Smart 20s, which is all spelled out like SmartTwenties. A lot of people, when I say that, think it's 2 O's, but no, it's Smart 20s. So that's the best place to find me. And if anyone wants to get in touch, they can DM me or send me an email via my blog.
Perfect. So thank you so much again for coming on. That was honestly such an insightful discussion. I know I'm going to be re-listening to this a couple of times. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Nika.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Young and Ambitious podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. It really helps us get this out there and impacting more lives. Now, make sure to also take a screenshot and tag at Neetha Moini and at the Positivity Boss on your podcast, and make sure to join the Young Bosses Collective Facebook group, where we have a community of young, ambitious people all supporting each other. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next time. Bye.